I am in, I don't know, Luca, where are we? Are we in Midtown?
Midtown.
We're in Midtown
still. We're in Midtown.
It's kind of northern part of Midtown.
Midtown, yeah.
I'm in Midtown, Atlanta, and I'm at a wonderful pizzeria, Veruni. And with Luca Veruni, the pizziola and owner of Pizzeria Veruni. And Luca has two locations, one here, which is his original, and then he has one in Krog Street Market as well. Now, Luca will talk to us about pizza and what makes great pizza, but really I want to know as well about life in the States and what is that life like to be a chef these days in the States, in a place that's so strange and wonderful in so many ways, but is going through a lot of craziness.
Right.
So what is good about all that? But first, you started with another group. You started at Pizzeria Antico.
Yes.
And Antico was really the first in Atlanta because of, I think, your skill set and what you did coming from Naples to bring truly great pizza to this area. We had some okay pizza. It's very Americanized pizza.
When I moved in Atlanta, I remember, like, you know, very vividly, like, that there was no non-Neapolitan pizza. So that was one of the attractions that made me come here. And I was going around at that time, like, you know, Leanne, my wife, she was my girlfriend. So I moved here for about 2 weeks. And I was checking as many Italian restaurant and pizzeria around. And I discovered that there was a non-Neapolitan pizza. And I said, how come there is a non-Neapolitan pizza in a city that, you know, it's upcoming as Atlanta? And then the rest, it's pretty much history. Like, you know, I met Giovanni.
Yeah.
And we decided to open Antico Pizza together.
Giovanni is the owner of Antico and Gio's in Atlanta. So, and you opened up together?
Yeah, we opened up Antico together. And Antico was just it was an idea. It was not a pizzeria. It was an idea. And our idea was to make, like, you know, this Neapolitan pie and pre-make them. And cook them 70%, and then sell them to markets, and that's the way we started. And one day I remember, like, you know, I don't remember who was the blogger that came in, and she started to ask us questions. She was fascinating with the brick oven, and from that day, like, you know, we decided to switch from you know.
That was the day that changed everything, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's great. But, I mean, Antico's story and how the business model is really interesting. You walk in, you kind of queue up, you go to a counter, you're spending $18 to $24 on a pizza.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big pizza. It's meant for more like two people,
but
not four.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it, you order and you get a drink and you get a little placard. And you walk to a very industrial table. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit down and your pizza's fired into an oven. And the pizza comes out and it's delicious. But what you brought to Veruni that's a little bit different, I think, is just raising the bar even a little bit more.
Exactly.
And though Antico is always about great ingredients, you're really the master of finding amazingly interesting ingredients. Not even interesting, but just the best of the best that you think are necessary. So first of all, let's talk about what is a Neapolitan pizza? Like, what's a pizza from Naples? What's the difference between a pizza from Naples and a pizza that you would get in New York?
Okay, so like a pizza in New York, as you guys know, it's a pizza that's been cooked like in a gas oven, which like it sits in that room for about 7 minutes for about 450 to 500 degrees.
And is this the impatience of Italian people that you want to cook it in like 1 minute?
No, like, you know, the 1 minute thing is like, you know, yes, Italian people, they are very impatient. They are very passionate. They want like they when they want it their way. But, Neapolitan pizza gets cooked like in that oven because, that's the history of a bread. You know, pizza is really related to bread. And, in Naples, so like, you know, we use the brick oven, which back in the day, if you think about Naples, early 800, there were not that many ovens. There were like maybe a few ovens in the city. And everybody used to go there, making their pizza. And back in the day, there was a guy selling a pizza in a stove. Stove, it's just a metal round container. Where like, you know, people were making pizza in the morning, selling it to the wise guy, the street kids in Naples. And they used to fill it up with this stove in order to sell the pizza at night.
Okay.
That's why the texture of a Neapolitan pizza is so wet. It's so fluffy because the majority of people, they had to pretty much work the entire day in order to buy one slice a night. That's why we are really the inventors of fast food. Yeah. Everybody thinks fast food. It's American.
Because
thing.
It's yeah. made in the morning, reheated,
yes,
and sold
yes,
at night.
It's a street food.
Yeah.
Which then with time, it become really the food for everybody. Like now, like, you know, everybody wants to make a pizza. It's cool. It's
the hip thing of
yeah,
the moment.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
It's been hip for a long time. I think things can become hip. Or there's things that are iconic,
exactly.
And great pizza is an iconic thing now. It's no longer just hip. I mean, we're not going to see. It's not like a poke shop. That's a fad,
right?
You know, that's a blip. It'll go away. Frozen yogurt is a blip. It'll go away. Pizza's been here for
stay.
A thousand
it's
years.
Gonna, it's gonna stay. Actually, like, you know, 2 years ago, the pizzaiolo, which is the pizza maker. Back in the day in Italy, it's not a real job. It was more like, you know, if you cannot become a chef or a good chef, make pizza. Then with time, the pizza maker became like really an art. And 2 years ago, like, you know, the UNESCO made the role of a pizzaiolo protected under UNESCO, which became like something.
Yeah.
It was a big day for us.
Yeah.
It was really a big deal.
And that fraternal order of pizzaiolos, what's it called?
Pizzaiolo.
Yeah, but the group, the Neapolitan Association.
That's the Associazione Vera Pizza Napoletana,
okay.
Which like in Naples, you have about two or three different cities association, which they try to prevent people from talking poop about Neapolitan pizza, but like a dessert, because nowadays everybody thinks you can buy like, you know, the best oven, the good-looking oven, and just buy the caputo flour, buy the tomato, and then you make Neapolitan pizza. It's not like
it's
that
not
simple.
Like that. Yeah.
You gotta have a freeze the skill. Like, you know, there's someone who can understand like how the oven works.
So I have this thing about simple food, and my line to young chefs is that simple food is actually the most difficult to make.
Exactly.
Because it takes the longest time to really learn the purity of the idea of it. Like roasting a chicken. Anybody can roast a chicken. Whether you can roast the best chicken, that's another
that's
story.
Different.
Because that takes a lot of technique and a lot of learning. So where do you learn to be a pizza maker? Like, how did you come up in Naples?
So like in Naples, like, you know, there are pizzeria one next to each other. It's pretty much like New York. It's like what Atlanta is becoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are pizzeria coming up, like, you know, every other week there is someone coming new in Atlanta, which, to be honest with you, I'm happy, because competition is really what makes people get better, you know, and understanding, even your guests, understanding, okay, what's the difference between this pizza and the other pizza? But going back to your question, I think nowadays, like, you know, simple food, it's really the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But people try to complicate it, overcomplicate it too much. So, like, it's good when people, like, you know, like Vera Pizza Napoletana, they trying to defend what the people previous of me did. But nowadays it's hard because, again, like, you might be under the Associazione Vera Pizza Napoletana, which they come, they check you out, they make sure you use the right ingredients, the right oven, and then 2 months, 3 months from now, they might switch to a different oven or they might switch to a different product. So it's really a big mess out there.
So how do you make the dough? What's the process for making your dough?
The dough, like, you know, we make a dough, like, you know, the regular way, which we use just the four simple ingredients, flour, yeast, water, and salt. The uniqueness about our dough, it's the yeast. We don't buy yeast. We don't use, like, you know, the chemical yeast. We make our own yeast, which is called madre. It's actually a little bit more complex as a project because the mother, it's like a living...
it's a sourdough starter.
Right.
It's a mother.
So, right. Yeah. So, like, you never know the way that, you know, really reacts. So you got to keep very careful the way you use it. And we refresh it like this madre, which is just like, you know, water and flour. We refresh it every day, every time we do our batch.
You're feeding
and,
it.
Yeah, we're feeding it. So, like, the good bacteria that it's like in the air, interacts with the...
Do you find that different? Like, is the taste difference here than in Naples?
No.
Because the different yeast in the air?
No, like, you know, it depends. Because even in Naples, like, you know, from one pizzeria to another pizzeria, you're going to taste the difference if you use, like, you know, regular yeast or like a madre yeast, because the flavor is a little bit more complex. with the madre.
Yeah.
But a good pizzeria can make a great pizza without the madre. Like, you know, madre nowadays, it's another gimmick. Right. Everybody want to use a madre because, you know, it that's sounds like thing. Nicer. Like, yeah. You know, or like you hear a story about people, I have a disease for about 100 years. So it attracts like people, like you build a story, but it's overcomplicated. I did it because I wanted to, when I opened up Barui Napoli, I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to be classified or compared to other pizzeria, which I was compared to other pizzeria because when I came here, I opened the first Neapolitan pizzeria, which was Antigua on the west side. Yeah. So when I decided to open my own brand, people like, you know, it's normal. People are gonna compare.
Yeah.
But the guy that really made myself stronger and my mentor, it's Enzo Coccia. Enzo Coccia, it's one, I believe it's the first pizza maker in Naples that start to dissociate himself from the typical pizzeria. And he said, all right, I got to make a good dough. I got to use this pizza. The pizza dough, it's like kind of like my plate. I want to put the best ingredients that I can find on this pizza. So he was one of the first guy that, you know, start to go back and let me understand more about San Marzano tomato. Because even the San Marzano tomato in Italy, 10, 15 years ago, was dying. Because right. Monsanto, like this big company, they try to kill like the original seed. And then like, you know, you don't have this product something. Anymore.
Yeah.
So like I have like a great like a relationship with Gustavo Rosso and Danny Kopp, which the owner is Paolo Ruggiero. He's a young guy like me, and he's super passionate about San Marzano. His dad was the president of the Consorzio San Marzano Tomato, and he does a great job with the tomato. And if you go check the way that they grow this tomato, they are grown by people that they are average 80, 85 years old, so they're old. But they work harder than me.
Is like, there another generation coming along to save those tomatoes? And
to be honest, right now, every time I go check like their land and then we go check and check the quality of the tomato, I don't see young people around.
They're just getting older and older.
Right.
And that's the fear, is that sometimes we have beautiful exactly. products that are done and the next generation just doesn't want to take
over. Who's going to do it?
And you're like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And people complain, especially south of Italy, people complain about there is not enough job, there is no job. But nowadays, the new generation, they really don't want to work hard, or like the way that my dad worked, or like the way that I worked to get to my...
I don't think you would have said that 10 years ago. I think we're of that age now where we say it, because, you know, we're getting older, but yeah. I don't think they work hard, they're just... You have to find what they're interested in. And I think we're at a good time with the younger generation is that they find things and they will research it and do more of learning about it than any other generation I've ever seen.
That's
if
correct.
You find them the focus to do it.
But at one point, you got to leave your computer, your internet, and you got to go out and really experience, like, you know, what you learn. Like, you know, you got to walk the land and smell these tomatoes, smell this basil to really say, like, all right, what I studied, what I researched, you know, I got to back up by actually touching it, like living it. Like, you know, and nowadays I see, like, you know, majority, which is great because there is more knowledge about product. Back in the day, if you were knowledgeable on food, on pizza, and I was not knowledgeable, you could tell me whatever you wanted. You know, I could believe it. Most of the time, you are going to believe it, especially.
I think it's more difficult for chefs and waiters now. They can't lie anymore.
Exactly. Now, like, you can pull out a recipe or like a product.
You can pull out your phone and search anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we have to be transparent with it.
And there is a lot of people that improvise. There is like, people improvise a lot. Like, you know, people turn like in a chef on pizza, like whatever, like, you know, from one day to another.
Yeah.
Which to me, it's our job to make sure, like, you know, we
it's
do embrace
consistent.
And yes, yeah,
and your adherence to the values and the products that you have needs to be continuous and needs to be very consistent.
Right.
So with these San Marzano tomatoes, you're going and importing them directly.
Yes.
Okay.
So we've been
How many times a year are you bringing in? I mean, this is massive shipment.
We have been bringing like tomato like since 2013. when I start like you know the project on Baruni Napoli, and we buy about each pallet, each container contain about 20 to 22 pallet, and they come here like you know at least twice to three times like a bit three times a year.
Could you find something a little less heavy? I mean, that's cans weigh a lot.
No,
where do
like
you store
we storage like a majority of the stuff gets storage like you know in the main location. We have like a loft area where we storage, and then like the back dining area, we storage everything over
basically
there.
Basically, there are canned tomatoes everywhere in this restaurant.
That is good. Yeah.
So when we've got a good, like, you're known for the most
authentic.
The authentic, but the simplest pizza in the world, which is a margarita.
Yes.
So a margarita has tomatoes, some marzanos. It's got beautiful mozzarella. So let's talk about that. And then it's got salt, and then it's got basil.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yes. So, like, that's why, like, you know, margarita is my favorite pizza. Margarita is the pizza that, you know, I'm very proud. And reason why, because all the ingredients we use it for, they all come from Napoli. So, like, you know, from the same city that where I was born and raised. The only local product that we use on our margarita is the basil, when you can find the good local basil. But yes, the San Marzano comes from the Sarno area of Naples. And it's a funny story because, you know, San Marzano are from Naples. But the original seed, we were talking about seed before, comes from Peru. It was a gift that one of the king of Peru gave to the kingdom of Naples. And luckily for us, when they were, like, you know, growing the tomato, like the best like soil for that type of tomato was the volcanic soil of the area Agro Sarnese Nocerino, which produce like, you know, not the best, the only San Marzano tomato. Because you see San Marzano tomato and the can says a product of California. It cannot be.
Yeah.
California, they got great tomato. But call it California tomato. Don't call it San Marzano tomato.
It's like champagne. Champagne comes from one place.
Right. You know. Exactly.
It's like Pecorino Romano.
Exactly.
From one,
exactly.
One
so, like, I don't. That's the thing is that it makes me mad. It makes me mad because when you go there, you see the reality about these farmers that they are three times my age, and they still work 12 hours a day with their back. Like, you know, it's really upsetting me because there is people that they put so much love and passion in order to preserve. And they were that reality that was almost like, you know, dying.
But this sort of transparency of product is important, mostly with Italian products, because there's been a lot of history of things like extra virgin olive oil from Italy not being really extra virgin olive oil, San Marzano's being not really San Marzano's. So, but it sounds to me like you've gotten to the bottom of the issue and are trying to care for the product through the process and also eliminating all the middlemen in
exactly.
between.
The middleman, it's a problem because, like, sometimes when you talk with suppliers, first of all, they don't have the knowledge. They really don't know the difference between a plum tomato and a San Marzano tomato. So my first question is how you're going to be able to sell me a product if you don't know what you're selling me. Pretty much you don't know your job. And I had, like, a lot of this argument with the suppliers in the beginning because... Everybody came here, buy my tomato. I said, I'm not going to buy any of your tomato, any of you. I'm going to bring my own tomato. When I bring the tomato here and everybody call me crazy, why you got to go over and do all this? And they tasted the suppliers in Atlanta wanted to buy my tomato and give me 5 cents on top of each. And I said, it's not about the money. And even if I want to say yes and make like a dollar on it, it's not going to work because we cannot supply San Marzano tomato to the entire Atlanta market. We don't have that many.
It's a very
same thing
product.
From me. Like, you know, the reason why I can receive it, one, because there is a great, clear relationship between me and the producer. And two, because, like, you know, when I go there, I buy so much and I buy, like, you know, I got to pay this tomato 6 months ahead. It's they're going to get paid before they get shipped to America.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, if you cannot do that, you're out.
Yeah, yeah. And then, okay, let's talk about the cheese. Let's talk about mozzarella. Ooh, what's the mozzarella you're using?
Okay, we use two types of mozzarella. We use a buffalo mozzarella, which the buffalo mozzarella I like to use just for the margherita pizza. Because margherita pizza being so simple, so San Marzano sauce, mozzarella, olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, and basil. The buffalo mozzarella is to me, in flavor, it's superior to the fresh mozzarella fior di latte because it got a little bit more acidity, it's a little bit more sour. So you can kind of like taste like, you know, the grass that is a buffalo, like, you know, eaten like, you know, in south of Italy. And release a little bit more of water, there is more fat. So when, like, you know, when you cook it and release a little bit more liquid, which for Americans, like, you know, it's sometimes a problem because, you know, everybody are used to a crispy, well-done New York pie. So when you do like an extremely authentic margherita pizza, it's going to release more water, more fat because it's...
The crust will have a fair bit of color on it.
It's a real
cheese.
The bottom
will have a little bit, but then the top is going to be almost soupy in some ways. And it's meant to be that way.
It's meant to be that way.
The good cheese does that.
Exactly. It's meant to be that way. So like even in the beginning when we opened, 90% of the people say, wow, I never tried it like that. It's great. And 10% of people, how come it's not the same pizza you used to make? Because it was not meant to be that way. You know what I mean? I wanted to do something that, one, made me happy because that's the pizza that I grew up with. So I didn't want to find any compromise. I didn't want to Americanize it.
I think if you're making 90% happy, you're doing pretty well world.
Yes, but when people, like, they know you coming from a different concept, and that concept was working, and then, like, you know, you want to put your...
There's an expectation for
something.
They might
think it's a spin. It's not actually a spin. It's the way that, you know, Neapolitan pizza need to be made. And then with time, like, you know, it became a spin because I like to say I love inconsistency. Consistency, like, it's what makes or break a restaurant. But if you check a picture of my pizza... They're completely different from the first day that I opened the restaurant because, I think your product, I see myself in a pizza, like you evolve. Like, you know, so like my product, it's always the dough, it's going to be pretty much, hopefully, 99%, 95% the same every day. And it cannot be the same every day because it's a natural product, you know, a change with humidity, a change with humidity in the flour, a change with the heat. So it's something that's gonna completely, it's gonna be changed, but you want it to be closer to the same one, like, you know, every day. But things are gonna change it, and you gotta make sure, like, you know, that if you find like, you know, a better tomato, which I didn't find since I opened, that's the only product that's been the same since we opened it. But buffalo mozzarella, fresh mozzarella, we did the change multiple times because if I find a better supply, if I find, like, you know, someone that cares about their cow, their buffalo, more than the previous guy, I'm going to change it. I'm loyal and faithful to my suppliers, but it's all about the quality.
But also the availability of those products has changed immensely in the last 10 years.
Exactly.
So we see new stuff coming out on the market and different products that have been there for years, maybe in Italy, and finally being brought over and imported so you can get better and better quality. But then you've got olive oil, and olive oil, are you direct importing?
Yes, that one comes directly from Sorrento. So there is a small frantoio in Sorrento
What is frantoio?
Frantoio, it's like a small company that, you know, press olive oil.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I've seen it on so many olive oil bottles. I don't think I ever knew what it meant.
So, like, I met them about 8 years ago through my dad. My dad is an accountant for a big produce company. So that's where the love for the fresh ingredients come from. My dad, like, you know, from dad. And we went there. We tasted, like, the oil. They pressed the olives cold, like the way they used to do it. And we fall in love for this oil. And when I went there, like, you know, the tomato guy, and I said, I'm going to buy that much, bring in Italy. They were laughing at me because not even in Italy, sometimes you have a pizzeria that they buy that quantity, that volume. And they say, like, all right, this kid is young. What is doing? Like, you know, like, and then with time, like, you know, when they saw the ordering, me placing the order time after time, said, all right, it's happening.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me happy also because I'm able to generate, like, work and new jobs in America but I'm able to help, like, you know, my people in Italy by bringing something that represented me and them in a different country.
You're running two economic cycles which is brilliant.
And I love my job because to me I'm a messiah of Naples, not just a messiah of a pizza, messiah of like city of Naples. Like it's a city that that beside the pizza has so many great culinary things that now people are just discovering nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got two more ingredients that are going on a margarita. One is basil. What kind of basil are you using?
We tend to use, like, you know, basil that doesn't have, like, I don't love a basil with big leaves. And right. Sometimes when you don't buy local basil, like basil, sometimes, majority of times, if you don't find in Georgia, especially when it's too hot, comes from Florida, or like sometimes comes from Venezuela and Mexico. And the one from Venezuela, it's very strong, but the leaves are super big. Mm-hmm. And you put three leaves, like, kind of like cover the entire pizza, and I don't like that.
It's like camouflage.
Yes.
It's not cool.
Yes, yeah.
That's cool. But basil can be so tender and wilt so quickly. So how are you keeping the basil, like, vibrant?
So the basil, like, we buy a lot of basil for the two pizzeria, but we tend to make our order, like, you know, every 2 days.
Okay.
So we tend to buy, let's say, like, you know, we buy 10 to 15 bags of basil every 2 to 3 days. Because as you know, like, you know, the basil is extremely tender, like, you know, and if you don't put, like, in the right spot in the fridge, it's going to turn black right away.
Yeah, it goes black like that. Yeah. So. Okay, so basil's covered. Now we've got the secret ingredient, which to me isn't an ingredient in a lot of ways, though they're better quality ones, which is salt.
Yes.
So where's your salt coming from?
The salt comes also from Italy. Comes from Italy, not from Napoli. No, so it comes from La Salina di Cervia, which is in north of Italy.
Okay.
And their salt, it's called Sale dei Papi, salt of the Pope. The reason why it takes the name from the Pope, because it's such a good salt that the first batch of that they get ready, they send it in Rome to the Vatican, and the Pope kind of bless it. So from there, like, it takes... the name of the salt, and it's actually called to the sweet salt, which is not such a thing as a sweet salt, but it's a little bit sweeter than other type of salt.
Okay, yeah. Is it very fine or
yes?
Is it, okay,
fine sea salt.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
So with opening businesses here, and the second business is in one of these more modern food halls,
right?
Which is called Krog Street Market. And Krog Street was kind of... Was Krog Street before Ponce or after?
Krog Street was before Ponce.
So the two main food halls that have made Atlanta... that really changed the dining scene in Atlanta a lot are Ponce City Market and Krog Street. And Luca's got a Veruni in Krog Street. It's done very well. But these developers just constantly want to do something new. They want the new developments everywhere around in these models of food halls. And I worry that there aren't enough people to support all these things. So when we talk about rent rates, I always look at, you know, coming in at, you know, 8 or below now. It used to be 5 or below.
Uh-huh.
And 5% of my gross. So, I mean, is it achievable? Because you're in a business that's so volume. Like, you have to do a lot of covers to do well.
Right.
I come in fine dining. My ticket average is much higher. In a lot of ways, so I have to do less people. I'd like to do more, but yeah.
To make it.
Yeah, so it's I'm wondering, like, how many more food halls can we do around Atlanta? Like, does that type of food hall work anywhere? Like, what's the magic mix? Like, how many people do you need to have around you? Because Americans, to me, I think the food hall is kind of like, it's kind of like our vision of what Europe is kind of like.
That's right. I grew up with like that. I grew up with the
food
hall.
There's stuff everywhere.
Right. But more than food hall was like, you know, open market, which that's the idea of all these food halls that are opening in Atlanta and, you know, any other city in America. The reason why that I decided to go with Krog, because I was coming back from a trip from Madrid. And in Madrid, there are so many nice... market, you know, kind of like the Mercado de San Miguel, which they fascinating me because the food was great. And what I liked about it was people, they were going around, but they were not able to sit. And in Europe, like, you know, we can eat standing, you know, drinking standing, which in America, it's a little bit different. So when the people from Krog, like the original owners, like approached me and they said, like, we really want you there. I wanted to do it, but I was a little bit struggling because it's not Europe. You know, it's not Europe. It's not going to be Europe. And people here, like, you know, something like in the market changed. People, like, you know, want something better. They are willing to spend a little bit more to get something that, you know, they saw, like, from a previous trip. But what I was scared about Krog or, like, other markets, it's seating. You know, like, there was not that much seating. There was no...
So people were forced to stand up.
Yeah, they're forced to stand up. Yeah. But my type of a pizza, it's not like your New York pie that you can eat while you walk. You know, like, you know, it's the sauce, it's going to be sliding from right to left. So I said, like, let me try. Let me try, because I think, like, you know, that the market is changing. And to be honest with you, I was fascinated about the amount of pizza we sell at Krog on the weekend. We have one oven compared to the two oven we have here. And the place, it's small. It's 100 square foot. And we do on Saturday, we do from 500 to 600 pie with one oven. It's incredible.
How many pies can you fit in one of those ovens?
Okay, so, like, we can fit, like, the size that we have in Monroe, which is a 14, 15-inch pie. We can put, like, you know, four pie easily in the oven.
But they cook so quickly that you have to have somebody really agile.
Exactly. And that's why we keep, like, two ovens, because in Naples, any pizza you're going to go, you're going to see always one oven. Just nowadays in Naples, too, mentality changing. Pizza makers become more a businessman. And you start to see pizzeria with two, three, or four ovens inside. But with one oven, that's the way we always operate in Naples. And there are pizzeria that might make, like, you know, 1,000 pie in one day one oven.
Yeah.
And that means that, you know, the pizza maker over there, these skills are enormous.
Yeah.
And that's one thing it's hard to find in America, especially in the south of America, south of the United States. It's easy to move the logistic. It's easy to move people around, but it's really hard to move your culture. So when you are gonna have a pizzaioli coming here, which they worked for so many pizzeria in the city or so many chain, they come here and they struggle because we do Neapolitan pizza, and our pizza, like, it's soft, it's wet, it's a room temperature. You know, like, you know, you're not going to put, like, a steak right from the freezer and put on the grill. You're not going to have the same result.
Right.
Same thing with our dough. We don't pull it out the dough from the fridge and then we smash it on the table. We make sure that the dough has been out for 2-3 hours in order to reach room temperature, because the process of Neapolitan pizza, the main ingredient of Neapolitan pizza that we didn't mention, it's an ingredient no one can see. It's hair.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you collect the air and you can press that air through the edge. That's why you have that puffy, light edge, because the air gets accumulated through the edge. And then when you put, like, in a 900 degrees oven, the heat is going to make sure the edge is going to rise up.
You know, so you're rolling it out, and as you're rolling it out with your hands, you're forcing from the center with your knuckles almost to create a sort of a bevel along the side.
Exactly.
And that bevel, it contains air. And as it hits the really hot oven, the oven's at what heat? 850?
850. The perfect temperature, it's 850 to 900. I tell the guys never to go above 900 degrees, because you're going to blast the pizza. It's going to be raw. It's going to cook in less than, when you cook pizza in less than a minute, 55 seconds, it's a raw pizza, because it's going to get black
on the center.
But in the center, it's gonna be dough. It's
like
gonna be raw.
Cooking a chicken in 15 minutes in a 500 degree oven,
you're gonna
kill somebody.
Yeah, and you can BS a lot of people, because a lot of people that come here just from what they see on TV or from what they hear or what they read, are your oven 1,000 degrees? And I always say it can go to 1,000 or more, but you don't want 1,000 degrees. Yeah. You don't want to get sick.
So what kind of wood are you using?
It's oak. Originally, like, I like to use oak or beech. The beech, which is a lighter, like, you know, type of wood, you really wanted just to start your oven or do you want to use it the once in your oven? It's a room temperature. At room temperature, you don't need to put like, you know, big piece of boot.
Is beach easy to find around here?
Beach, it's not easy
it's
to find.
Not easy,
like, so yeah. So like I struggled for a long time about the beach. I found it at times, but you know, was coming from a different region and it was extremely expensive. So what I do, I buy the we call wood dust. So like it's the same oak that we use it, like oak, like it's what you need to keep the bottom of the oven hot. That's mm-hmm. what cooks the pizza. The dome, you need just to roast like you know, your ingredients and to give like a little bit of flavor and smell, you know, to the pizza. But like the surface that really cooks the pizza, it's the bottom one. So if you have like a really hot top dome and a really low bottom of the oven, your pizza is going to be terrible. It's going
right.
to be, yeah.
Yeah. What would you never put on a pizza? Like, what do you see on pizza that you're just like, why would anyone do that?
Chicken.
Chicken.
I won't put like, you know, I won't put like chicken on pizza because again, like, you know, pizza, like, you know, it's been around for long time.
Way before California Pizza Kitchen.
Way before California Pizza. And the Frisch pizza, like, you know, they were just not even sauce. Sauce was not an option. It was expensive. And pizza was really like a something to feed yourself, something to get full. So
it's like pasta was, though. But Americans, like, we put way too much sauce on pizza and we put way too much sauce on pasta
mm-hmm.
Because we don't really understand right. that it's supposed to be like a perfection through simplicity of that base starch.
Exactly.
And that's what's the
exactly.
important part. But that's what pizza starch
yeah.
is. Yeah.
The Frisch pizza, they were just like, you know, focaccia.
Yeah.
With small fish. So like the fishermen, when they throw their net in the water, these small fish, they're not even anchovy. They're like, kind of like the little babies of the anchovy. In Naples, we call piscitelli, which I don't know how to translate here in America.
I think it's like minnows or something, but yeah,
yeah,
I know what you mean.
And that's what they used to use it. And then like, you know, with the tomato came in the second time, and then mozzarella came really in the early 19th century. The first pizza that, you know, that was called Margherita was created by a guy called Esposito, Rafael Esposito, which is a pretty like a known story. He pretty much marketized the Margherita pizza. He's the one who invented the name. Because there is like a story and there is a books that they can show and prove that, you know, the sauce and the mozzarella was already on pizza a century before him. But what this guy did, pretty much like he was a good marketing guy and gave the name to the pizza. The name took like, you know, from the queen of Italy, Regina Margherita. And that's like, you know, that's the story how Margherita like really born. But the Margherita pizza, it's been around much before like what he claims.
What is the sort of spread that's the fermented fish with the chilies?
The alici?
Like was it?
Alici?
Yeah, alici.
Yeah. So alici, like it's the pizza with alici, it's the original pizza of Naples.
Okay.
So margherita, it's my favorite pizza. It's a great pizza. But the pizza that you're going to see in Naples on everybody menu and the pizza that a lot of people tend to eat, it's the marinara.
Right.
Which there is no cheese because the cheese was expensive. It's expensive now and it was much more expensive back then. So it was just like sauce, San Marzano sauce, small alici, and...
But why marinara means from the sea? How
right.
did marinara become just tomato sauce in the United States?
Exactly. Like
where's the fish? Is it supposed to just have anchovy in it? Or?
Which sometimes I'm afraid to call a marinara in the restaurant too, because when you say marinara, like... people like, you know, they think about what you guys call the pronto sauce, like, you know, what comes of the I don't even
prego
know
the
prego, like, you know, which like my guys when they taste like when we train them, it's like, what a minute, like, but it's so much different from I said exactly, like, you know, I don't know what these people like, you know, did.
We're not answering the phone.
We're busy.
No, but it's funny in translation how things get lost. But
yeah.
So you come here. How long have you been in the States now?
15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from Canada, so I've been here 24 years now.
Wow.
So, but how does it feel to be an immigrant today?
I feel great. Feel great, like, you know, to I became an American citizen about 5 or 6 years ago.
Me too.
And
it was one of the most amazing ceremonies room.
Oh my God! Like, you know,
there were 82 people, or 80 different countries.
Same thing with me. Like, we were about 110 people, and the guy said like it was about 90 different countries. And it was like, you know, to be honest with you, like it was a nice day. Like, you know,
it was a tearjerker. I mean, I was just like touched.
It was emotional. Like, it was emotional. It was so many different people. Like, and after so many years, like, you know, spending time here, I really now can tell, like, you know, I'm a part of this culture, you know, because I feel I'm an American, and America did, like, you know, so much for me. And but I feel fortunate because I can use the both culture, you know, when it pleases me the most. So when I go in Italy, you know, press the button, you're Italian again.
Yeah,
you're here, like, you know, and you're American, like, you know, and it's awesome to see, like, how these two cultures, like, you know, they're different, but sometimes they complement each other. Yeah,
well, we're citizens of the world as well, and right. That's the beautiful thing. But right. It's a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a respect for the place, but it's also, to me, a respect for everyone that they can come here and find success and do what we do,
right?
And which is cook good food. So that's good. Luca, thank you very much.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
Been
thank
awesome
you for having
to talk.
Me. Thank you. Grazie.
Everybody, come by for a pizza.
Yeah, we're gonna have one now.
Yeah. Hey, brother.